Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Hello and welcome to Lost in Science. It is the science that you love, or maybe some science that you hate. I don't know whether these stories are going to make you happy or angry. We shall see. Stu, you're in a bit of a pickle, are you?
I am in a bit of a pickle. Well, no, not really, but I saw some coverage from the World Cup, which is going on in North America, and someone had a little accident, and then they called for help and they received a little sports drink, but it was a little sports drink of pickle juice. And
what?
And I started wondering what's going on with this pickle juice, and I found out there's a whole thing among sports people for slamming down a pickle juice. Light on the fizz, so you can slam it down fast.
So it's not just one particular country in the football / soccer World Cup.
It's not just football. It's like it's across endurance running. All these people go, yeah, pickle juice. It'll sort your cramps out. So I went, why are they doing this? And so I jumped into the pickle jar and I found out what's going on with the pickle juice fad, I suppose it is. But yeah.
Great. Well, as someone who's trying to get into some long distance running at the moment, I am keen to find out anything that will help with like muscle cramps and that sort of thing.
Well, hold on to your pickle jars, because there's some big news are coming, Chris.
Great. Well, speaking of muscles, I am going into, well, sort of, and muscles and I suppose plants as well. I am looking at a related story. What plants do you know that move, Stu?
Well, they all move, but in human scale, time scales, there's not many. There's a few that will suddenly move, like the sensitive plant, which is a mimosa, which closes its leaves.
Yes, that's true.
And there's the famous Venus flytrap, which
that is the one that I want to talk about today. Yes, the Venus flytrap
slams shut on its unsuspecting victims.
That's right. Yes. So yes, it is a very rapidly moving plant, and there has been some new research by physicists, of course, because I love to cover physicists doing strange things. Some new research that is trying to determine exactly how they do this. And yeah, they think they have an answer. Not everyone agrees, but we're going to look into that and see, yeah, what are the secrets of this rapid plant motion?
Ooh.
And I guess, if you pickled a Venus flytrap, would it move as fast? That's obviously the other question.
Do Venus flytraps have muscles is the question on my mind now.
That is the key question, I think, yeah.
Okay, well, let's get on with it then and find out. Now, I've noticed, and you may have noticed as well, Chris, that elite sports people will try just about anything they can to improve their performance and recovery from injury with...
Yeah, like winged keels, that sort of thing.
Is that a sport or is it just a hobby? Sailing. But obviously there's some fairly obvious restrictions on certain substances. I'm doing air quotes there.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me that not a year goes by without any number of athletes jumping on the bandwagon of some kind of therapy or supplement that they think will make them play better or run faster or run further. Ice baths was one I remember recently. They're all plunging themselves into ice baths.
Yeah. There's that tape, the Kinesi tape or whatever it's called, the bright colored tape that they have on, which not clear what it's meant to do.
Keeps them stuck together with the tape, doesn't it? Isn't that the point?
True.
Cupping's another one which had a bit of a resurgence. Yes.
For a while there, all the swimmers had like suspicious marks on them.
Yeah.
Like a remora or a lamprey had got them while they're in the pool.
Yeah, perhaps. Looking more like hickeys than therapy. But there are a couple of things from the last few years that stick in my mind, not because of their popularity, but because the almost complete lack of evidence they actually help anyone be better at sport. But recently, as I said, in the World Cup Football Championship in North America, an on-field referee, not a player, made minor headlines by calling for aid after falling to the ground during a match with a cramp. And they were assisted quickly by someone delivering them a small container of liquid, which is apparently widely used to alleviate cramps. And that liquid is actually pickle juice. So,
Okay, I have experienced the joy of the pickleback cocktail.
Right.
Have you ever had one of those?
Yeah, and, I had maybe stupidly assumed that that was a cunning way to get rid of jars of pickle juice by mixing them with spirits and getting unsuspecting punters to drink them. I didn't think it was a health drink.
No.
Certainly not when it's mixed with whiskey. But this is a widely accepted treatment for muscle cramps in the sporting world. I looked into it. And it's kind of based on some science, but the science isn't exactly clear. It's more like a cloudy jar of lactic fermentation byproduct of what's actually happening here. So
tell us more.
So the liquid we're talking about is not the juice of pickles. Obviously, pickles being the name, which I think we get from America because they don't call them pickles everywhere, but the name for preserved cucumbers, which, to be honest, are not even fermented in most cases, which is where the whole thing of pickling comes from, fermenting things in jars. Mm. But most pickles are preserved in a brine of vinegar and salt in a sealed container. They heat up the container. It pasteurizes what's inside. You can keep them on the shelf for, you know, a relatively unlimited period of time.
I imagine historically the salt was there to prevent spoilage.
Yes.
Like the high levels of salt.
Yes. So it's kind of vinegar and salt. But there's probably a few other things. The brine from that process is the pickle juice we're talking about. It's vinegar and salt. Maybe a bit of sugar. Sometimes they throw a bit of sugar in with the pickles. Mm. There'll probably be a bit of other things like garlic and mustard. But why would this be something that helps recover from a muscle cramp more quickly than anything else? And if you ask people, the first thing they say is that it's got something in it. And do you know what that thing is, Chris, that they say that it has in it?
I would say electrolytes.
It's got electrolytes. So
yeah, but that's to do with ions and stuff, which is basically what the salt is providing, isn't it?
Right, and salt
is the acid of the vinegar.
Salt behaves as an electrolyte, and it's one of the possible causes of muscle cramps is electrolyte imbalance in the muscle. So the extra salt, people assume, is what's helping with the cramp. It's balancing out your electrolytes and your muscles stop cramping. So there's been some study on this. In 2010, pickle juice was compared with deionized water in relieving electrically induced muscle cramps, which I think, whoever came up with that experiment was maybe should be kept away from electrical equipment and how they use it on people. But electrically induced muscle cramps, and it was found the pickle juice halved the duration of the cramps in this one study in 2010. So people had a cramp.
Also, that is a particular kind of muscle cramp, though, isn't it? I don't imagine that the referee out on the field there was been electrified.
He hadn't been electric, or they hadn't been electrocuted. But people had a cramp. They drank the pickle juice. They felt better quicker than if they drank water. Only it apparently had nothing to do with electrolytes because it was an instant effect. They drank the pickle juice and they felt better. Oh. So the cramps only lasted for like 2.5 minutes. And when they drank the pickle juice, they lasted for a minute and a half or a minute and 15 or whatever. So clearly that can't be the electrolytes, because for it to have any impact on electrolytes in the bloodstream or in the muscle, it would have to be absorbed into the body and circulated and they actually measured the blood electrolyte levels in the people, and they said there's no change in the electrolyte levels from the pickle juice. So it's not electrolytes at all, even though that's what nearly everyone thought. As it turns out, the kind of muscle cramps people tend to experience in sport are not caused by electrolyte imbalances anyway. There are a number of other causal factors, both internal and external, and to do with fitness and a whole bunch of other things. So if they did find an effect in reduction of cramp duration, what could be the therapeutic value of the pickle juice? What else could it be doing? So what they looked at was the cause of cramps are caused more often by the nerve signals being disrupted or confused, telling muscles to contract when they should be relaxing. And this is the cause of the cramping. Your muscles tightening up when it should be relaxing. And so you're trying to move your leg in one direction, which should the muscles should be behaving a certain way, and they're not behaving that way. They're tightening up, and that's what causes the cramp. You're trying to stretch your muscle against what it's trying to do. So it's been proposed that the pickle juice shocks the nervous system through oral receptors that have an impact on the misfiring nerves and the cramping muscle and stop the cramping. So you're kind of like rebooting the nervous system so the muscle stops cramping. So
that sounds vague or vagus, perhaps polyvagus.
Polyvagus is maybe a way to look at it. But so what they're proposing is that somehow the receptors in your mouth are controlling nerves in your leg muscles, which doesn't sound particularly logical or well supported. So other researchers tested a number of other things that could have a similar effect, shocking the receptors in the mouth. They tried vinegar, they tried lemon juice, they tried very strong saline solutions, they tried bitters, they tried hot sauce, they tried crushed chili, but none of them produced a reaction in stopping cramps or reducing the duration of the cramps. And in fact, nobody else has been able to find the same response as they found in this 2010 paper. Testing pickle juice against water in similar studies, they found highly variable responses between individuals in the same experiment. So was it doing anything at all? We don't really know. The guy who did the original study did a review in 2021 of a whole lot of things to do with muscle cramps, and he said, no, the best treatment for cramps is gentle static stretching. Not oral shock treatment. So basically getting a massage will alleviate your muscle cramp better than anything else at this point. So
there could be like a placebo effect going on here as well, though, I guess.
If there's a neurological basis for the cramp, then there could be something in that. But it turns out it might seem like a cool thing to chug pickle juice when your leg cramps and call for pickle juice when you're in the World Cup. Turns out it's probably not doing a great deal for your muscle recovery or for preventing damage from the cramp. And, you know, if we stay tuned, some other magical legal sports treatment will come up and take the place of pickle juice before the next Olympic Games or World Cup or swimming championship or whatever it is. But in the meantime, pickle juice is mostly good for keeping pickles fresh, not for improving recovery times on the football field.
So don't be a dill and quit gherkin around.
I think we're lost.
We're not lost.
Not even any short-range radio signals yet?
Except for a single, very powerful radio emission.
Of course, a transmitter of that sort isn't exactly standard equipment.
The science and technology must be absolutely mind-boggling.
Of course, that's mostly on the theoretical side.
What so far?
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, you're listening to Lost in Science.
Okay, yes, you're listening to Lost in Science. Now, Stu, I have young children, five-year-old twins, so it's no surprise that we have a Venus flytrap plant in our house.
Do they? I've heard from people who grow Venus flytraps professionally that the most common way for them to die is that kids poke them and poke them and poke them and trigger them all the time, and they run out of energy, and that kills them. Is that happening in your house?
It has happened a little bit, but no, it hasn't actually. We put them in a put the, we had to move the plant to a better location because it was kind of getting, yeah, it was kind of getting bumped. It wasn't getting enough water and sort of stuff. So it's now in the kitchen windowsill where it's got a better supply of insects as well. So it's doing all right.
Yeah.
It's doing all right.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, you need to keep them very pretty moist, it yes. seems, is they, one they, of the key things.
They do, clutches. They do grow in swamps. Naturally, so.
Oh, yeah, we've all seen the movies where the giant carnivorous plants snatch people up in the jungle.
The one in the florist shop, which is probably snatched from the jungle, so yeah.
That's true, that's true. Yeah, so, but yeah, like I said, there's been some research looking at how they work and, you know, it does raise the question of what is actually going on with these and do these plants have muscles? Stu, do you think they have muscles?
So I remember looking at this some years ago on the show and there was arguments about whether they had nerves. So I think in order to have muscles, they would have to have nerves, but they couldn't finally make a conclusion about whether or not they had nerves. So I guess the question's still open whether they have muscles.
Well, they don't have muscles, I guess is the short answer. Despite no one less than Charles Darwin thinking they had muscles.
Oh.
And in fact, he apparently at the time there was actually a bit of work being done with, you know, with animal muscles and this sort of thing and the electrical properties and this sort of stuff. And so he got his mates to test the electrical properties of Venus flytraps. And they found that there was some electrical signaling in terms of ions.
Yeah.
But not nerves as such. But yeah, ions being transported. So there was an electrical component to it, but yeah, not muscles. It seems muscles are largely an animal phenomenon, shall we say?
Yeah. And, but you know, I guess it kind of makes sense if you've only seen a phenomenon in, you know, in animals and you go, oh, this plant seems to be able to do this thing that animals do. Surely it's the same process. Surely it's the same cause that's making that happen.
Yeah.
I don't think that's illogical, but you need better evidence than just it kind of did the same thing.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So yeah, they don't have muscles like animals do. And so the mechanism is going to be slightly different. Now there is a couple of different, I suppose, components to the mechanism for how Venus flytrap works. One of the things is just purely, I guess, a trick with the shape of them. So they can snap very quickly, I guess, is the thing. So, because they have to catch flies and stuff. And it was noticed fairly early on, I think it might have been by Darwin and his contemporaries, that they change shape when they're open and when they're shut. And I just mean that the actual leaves move. But they are convex, I believe, when they're open, and they're concave when they're shut.
Right.
And so this change in shape of them is kind of, it's a mechanical instability, I suppose, that causes them to be able to move very quickly. So if you think a bit like those, like you had to say half a ping pong ball, or not a ping ball, a squash ball or a tennis ball, something like that, and, you know, you turn it inside out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of bent the wrong way. And then it can easily pop back into the correct way.
Because it's got a whole lot of stored potential energy.
And that's right.
And it gets released really suddenly. We used to be able to buy them. They were called pop balls. And it was
half
a ball. You turn it inside out and throw it on the ground. It would pop up way higher than you threw it down from. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's a similar kind of thing is going on with the Venus flytrap. So there was this kind of, pop ball effect that seems to be able to make them move so much. Like a tenth of a second is what they can close in. So that's part of the trick. It's just purely that mechanical movement, but it's not the full answer because, you know, with your pop balls, like I said, you have to throw them on the ground. You know, if you want to like turn your half a tennis ball the right way around, you actually have to push on it. You have to actually do something to make it. Otherwise, it'll stay in that position for a very long time.
And you have to put the energy in because you reverse the shape of it by putting energy in yourself. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess the question is, how does the Venus flytrap put in that energy to get it in the right shape in the first place?
So the leading theory that for a long time was that it was the way that plants often move, which is by moving water around.
Ah, well, yeah, I guess that. So pressure of various kinds inside the plant.
Yeah, yeah. And you think about this, if you can push, say, more water, say, on the outside of the plant, it's going to expand and then push it to change shape.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
So that is one of the theories. And this is like I said, this is what you see with the way a lot of plants move, is by, yeah, moving water around in this way, by being able to bend in different forms in this mechanism. The other theory was that it is something a bit more subtle, in that kind of a similar sort of thing, but the cell walls on, say, the outside of the leaves soften, and they're more rigid on the inside. And so there's more tension on the inside that pulls it into the closed shape, which then snaps shut.
Okay. So I know this is something, which we used to do as an experiment in plant science, is that you would get a celery stick and slice it, and the external cells of the celery stick are more rigid than the internal cells. So when you put it in water, the internal cells expand more and it makes it curl in shapes,
yeah,
away towards the more rigid cells. So yeah, it's something you can easily demonstrate.
Yeah. So this is the two theories, and no one quite knew. So some physicists in France at the Aix-Marseille University decided to get to the bottom of this, because physicists have got nothing better to do than try to mop up other people's unsolved problems.
Sure.
Now, it's one of the things, it's been actually a fairly hard thing to study, apparently, because they do shut so quickly that it's very hard to see what's going on inside these plants. So they did a couple of things. They kind of cut the plants into sections, so they no longer had this geometry that would change from convex to concave, and they wouldn't move as fast. They also just did simple things like this, holding them open. To not let them shut, and just see what changes went on. So just holding them in place so they could observe what was going on when the plants were triggered. And they tried basically comparing these two different theories. Now, for the water one, what they did is they actually injected water into the plants and then measured how fast the water moved through the cells. And from that, they concluded that it did not move fast enough to get the effect that was required to close the flytrap.
To close that quickly.
Yeah. So if you remove the snapping mechanism, essentially, it will still close, but it'll take, instead of taking, say, a tenth of a second, it'll take about 4 seconds.
That's too slow to catch a fly.
It's too slow to catch a fly.
Yeah.
But it's still moving, basically.
Yep.
And apparently the speed that they measured the water moving through the plant was about a tenth as fast. Like it was an order of magnitude difference. It was 10 times too slow, if you want to put it that way.
Sure.
So they also then looked at this idea that, yeah, there's a change in the rigidity of the cells. And they got what they called a device? It was a little probe. They called it a nano indenter that could basically poke the cells.
Yeah.
And they found that they seemed to be getting softer when the mechanism was triggered. They weren't convinced that they couldn't say this is everything, because if there was water moving in and out of the cells, that would also cause the cells to maybe get a bit softer as well.
Yeah.
So what they did then, they used apparently dental paste to take molds of the cells. So it was very microscopic dental paste. And then they found after it was triggered and reset, that the cells bulged more than they had before, which indicated that the cell walls were softer than they had been previously.
Okay.
So they concluded from this that the cell walls are actually changing in their rigidity, and that this is what they're thinking is the explanation for how the Venus flytrap can actually move.
And have they published this paper that they've done all this?
Yeah, it's published in the journal Science, one of the leading scientific journals. And look, there's been a bit of response to it because, it is an interesting phenomenon. There are, like you said, there are a few other plants that move as well. It's interesting to see if there's confined similar mechanisms in those. Not everyone is convinced, that they, for instance, that they measured the speed that water could move correctly, that perhaps, you know, there's other ways that it could move a bit faster than the way that they measured it. And apparently also someone pointed out that it doesn't necessarily explain how the trap is able to open again.
Yeah.
After it's been closed. Apparently it closes for about 5 minutes or so and then reopens. And, you know, how would then you reverse this mechanism?
Yeah, it's got to be a reversal. It's got to be a reversible process because it does it
exactly,
multiple
yeah.
times before the leaf or the trap dies off. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other big missing piece is that if the cell walls are getting softer, how? There is no known mechanism for how that could happen. I mean, there's some theories, but, you know, there's no known mechanism for how that would actually work. So to really nail this theory down, you have to kind of find the mechanism for how it's actually the signaling or the chemical changes that are causing these changes in the cell walls.
Yeah, so they've made more questions than they've answered with this finding, really.
Yeah, they have, but it's interesting that they've had some pretty creative ways, like using dental paste and you know all kinds of things to try and you know model it. And yeah, so they've done some pretty clever ways of examining the very small scale of the plant cells. So it's actually pretty impressive that they were able to do this. But yeah, like it's just an interesting way, I guess, of probing like a completely different kingdom of life. Like we know how animal muscles work pretty well, but you know how plants can move so quickly is a much an unknown puzzle. And finally making some progress after hundreds of years. Like I said, Charles Darwin studied this. He had some good ideas, but it's been a long time trying to figure out how these things work. And so it's always interesting when, you know, someone can advance old science in that way.
All that experimentation and the physicists still aren't sure how they keep their traps shut.
And that's it for another episode of Lost in Science. Lost in Science is recorded for 3CR in Melbourne on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And it airs across Australia on the Community Radio Network with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. We would love you to get in touch with us. You can email us at lostinsci@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook, we're Lost in Science on 3CR, or on Twitter, where we're at lostinscience1. You can find us on your favourite podcast app, where if you get the chance, please give us a good rating and review, as that will raise us up in the search rankings so other people can find the science. Or you can listen to us however you listen to us now, where the same time every week, Claire, Stu and Chris get
Lost in Science!
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.